Did you see at the end of the last episode there was a splash screen that had a URL?
Yes.
Renegade on TV.com. Yeah.
It's not still
dead
around,
link, unfortunately.
Yeah.
we might be able to buy the URL.
Oh yeah, can we change TIS.com to
Renegade on TV?
Renegade.
It says click here to buy now. I got a call GoDaddy to get the price. Should I do it? Oh, I can fill out a form and submit it. Should I do it?
Yeah, do it. All
right.
Wait, have you actually?
Yeah, one of the sales consultants will be with me soon.
I'm in a real identity crisis here, Al.
Nothing penetrates within Dawson.
Who do you see in the mirror?
Hey!
Oh, grey, hot.
Hello and welcome to the Incomplete Series, the podcast where we watch the first episode of a TV series and the very last episode of a TV series. My name's Morgan, and joining me to do this is Jeremy Wiseman, man at law, lawman, however you want to say it. Jerome, how are you?
More of a you know, renegade bounty hunter than a certified lawyer, but I'm doing well. Happy birthday.
Thank you. It is my birthday, and my birthday treat is doing this show, Renegade, which we'll get to in a second.
What a treat!
And we got a lot to unpack. And
can't
Aaron,
wait for you to blow out the candles on this one.
Aaron, bounty hunter. Aaron, how are you?
I'm great, Morgan. You made a very good birthday wish this year. You've done us all a favour.
Thank you very much. I mean, you only turned 31 once, so why not?
It's the big one. The big 3-1.
The big 3-1. The most important. And lastly, Scott. Scott, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I'm ready to go out. Try and apprehend some would-be criminals, lock them up, put them away, collect my bounty, and ride off into the sunset.
Would-be criminals, bit of a minority report.
I get them before they really do the bad shit, you know? That's true. Policing gets it before the crime
happens.
So
you get them when they steal a Mars bar at the service station on the way to commit a triple homicide.
Mate, I get them when their mouth starts salivating about the Mars bar.
So all those like hard ass authoritarian like cops who just want to like go really hard on kids, they're ahead of the game. Yeah, once you see a kid steal a Mars bar, lock them up for life.
Lock them up for life.
You know how it's going to end.
Think about stealing.
Every
Mars.
Shoplifter you've read the minority report.
Every shoplifter put away for life is one life saved.
You can't prove that I'm by me doing my job. I'm not preventing thousands of crimes. It's unfalsifiable. That's my defense.
Yeah, ironclad.
I was going to say,
Your Honor,
the Renegade Code.
Since you've shaved in that mustache, Scott, I did notice it was more of an air of authority about you, that you were going to become a sterner podcaster. And now I get it. It's because you've become a man of law.
It's a bit of a symbiotic relationship. The mustache gives me the cred to go out and do it. But also,
that's the license.
It goes back in the other way. They feed off each other. The authority and the mustache.
He shaves
sort of
his ghost number into the mustache.
Yeah.
I can't really tell. It must be very faint.
I don't have that sort of definition.
You got to get in real close, and then just as you get in close, bam.
Meanwhile, Jez, since you've shaved your head, you might be going the other way. I can see you shoplifting some Mars bars.
The long hairless arm of the law.
So Scott's going to be watching you this episode.
I'm purging my body of all hair so that I command respect on the streets.
Do you think?
I was going to say, you look more like a criminal now. You look like a henchman out of Broken Arrow.
I'm only halfway there, Morgs. This will all be gone soon. These eyebrows, these are temporary.
When Scott locks you up, we'll still be able to podcast from prison?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think they've got webcams in prison.
Certain luxury.
They've got some recording
studios. Jeremy would be going to one of those like low-security day resort prisons that they've got.
Easy ride. As long as it's off the streets, I'm okay with it. You know?
Hey, I'll just invite all three of you in for a conjugal visit, and you can sneak in some... podcast mics.
Shelve a mic.
Then we just go into the weird prison sex trailer and quickly record a podcast.
Okay, I was actually gonna. I thought you'd be more like you'd be a part of like the all male cast version of the Midsummer Night's Dream play that they would run at the prison.
Jeremy Wiseman as Puck
leading it.
I'd be
the role he was born to play.
So that'd be my that'd be a big part of my rehabilitation is finding myself through theatre.
Theatre rehabilitation. It's the most effective pathway to back to society.
You guys are joking about this, but there is a great episode of Oz that centres around this exact premise of performing Shakespeare in order to rehabilitate prisoners. It's a wonderful episode.
Really?
Really. Really, well, really.
Jez did bring up us potentially doing Oz, but I think we'll leave that. I think we should park that because we've got a lot to get to.
Yeah, we've got to talk about Renegade.
Can we just talk about Renegade? Now, this was actually a fan suggestion. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes,
Scott.
It was Paul.
So thank you, Paul, because I had not heard of this. I was not aware of this. I didn't know anything about it. And holy hell, this is a life changer. There's so much to unpack. This is Baywatch Nights 2.0. As I said to you guys pre-podcast, this was as I expected. It delivered completely.
On sheer length of hair alone, you know?
Oh, it was flowing.
Not only is Reno rocking the feathered mullet, Bobby, his handler, is also rocking the feathered mullet.
Oh, too much. It's like they're channeling Barry Gibbs.
They really are. There was a shot in the last episode where it's just like a two-hander where they're talking, and every time it like shoots from behind one of them, you just see their ridiculously long flowing
lines. Yeah. I know the exact shots you're talking about.
I was loving it so much. When they were busting those cigars out and Bobby had that lavender blazer on. Oh, man. This show is too good.
This show was clearly very low budget, but the portion of the budget was probably 70% hair products, 25% duster, and then 5% everything else.
Oh, Bobby's costumes as well. There was a lot of
that's true.
Bobby's costumes are out of control.
It's so good.
I don't want to take anything away. Obviously, Reno's duster, but I don't want to take anything away from Dutch Dixon, the main villain, who just has some absolute belter suits. and there's some more outfits from the finale I want to get to. But
I didn't know a man could have that many pinstripes. It was outrageous.
He's
going to pinstripe his whole house.
I mean, is he getting like Gordon Gekko's hand-me-downs? I think it's sort of transcending what they had on Wall Street.
Shops at the same stores, yeah.
I do want to bring up that character, Dutch Dixon. So that was played by Stephen J. Cannell. So I don't know, I did some extra reading here. So Stephen J. Cannell was actually the creator of the show and starred in it as the main.
Yes, I had a feeling that this might be the case.
Because the last sort of clip in the outro
the sort of
credits.
the vanity plate of the production company. Yeah.
Because I saw that in the last episode and I was like, hang on, are they doing a Roseanne here where this is all just taking place in this guy's head? But no, it was a vanity credit.
No, and it's so good. The best, I'll tell you what it just reminded me of, and Aaron, I think you'll enjoy this. This was that episode of The Simpsons, the short film episode where Mr. Burns does the auditions, doesn't find anyone good enough to play himself, so he chooses to play Dutch Dixon by his own accord.
No one can capture the character that he had in his head.
Exactly. I know what I need. Like the perfect goatee, the slick back hair. But he's got an interesting amount of credits to his name. So he was a creator. You guys might not have heard of the Rockford Files, which it was. They had like 200 episodes from the 70s. But he also created The A-Team. He created 21 Jump Street. A show called Silk Stalkings in the 90s, which went for 9 seasons. That's just among some of his credits. Another one called The Hat Squad, which is about a group of teenagers who solve crimes. That one didn't last, only 1 season.
Hat-based
crimes?
I want to revisit that one later. That sounds interesting.
We'll get back to that. But he has a fair few credits to his name. I think The A-Team and
that's not bad.
Probably Hop, 21 Jump Street, big in the 80s. So, like, and if you actually go through his IMDb, he had like another 10 shows that were like 1-2 seasons.
He's done well. He earned those big strikes.
So, yeah, it's funny how this was the show he decided, I'm in this one. Believed in it. Yeah,
George Peppard boxed me out of the A-Team, but this is my show.
Yeah. I feel like he must have had bought a lot of stock in this show, and I bought a lot of stock in Lorenzo Lamas, who played Reno. Man. But
interesting choice, but I'm glad he did.
I mean, his line delivery is not great, but the hair more than makes up for it. You know, and you're going for you're casting based on body and hair, not on ability to act. And when you're casting Renegade, because the opening of the pilot is just like a 3-minute montage of him surfing. And then, alternating between surfing and making out with his smoking hot fiance, and then going back for a bit more of a surf, and then a bit of a frolic.
What was that?
That montage
just
was
so good. I thought we were coming in like 3 episodes deep, but that was
well, I did warn you guys because I watched this first. I watched this earlier in the week, and I said it was going to blow your dicks off. And sure enough, it can clean off.
We're all dickless.
This is just
there's nothing there.
Stephen Cannell knows how to introduce the show. You need smoking hot babes, and you need rigs, and you need surfing.
Exactly. Acting, totally secondary. We can worry about that. They can edit that out in post.
There is just one thing that I just want to say just before we get into the pilot, just to kind of set this up for the listeners to give them an idea of what kind of show this is, if you haven't already had a wonderful picture painted for you. So, the executive producer of this show is Stu Segal, and his Wikipedia page describes him, his career, saying, Segal began his career in 1970 directing sexploitation movies and hardcore pornography.
Oof. Good start.
Including the famous Insatiable with Marilyn Chambers. Now, I have to say, there is no relation to Steven Seagal, unfortunately.
I was really hoping
out on that. But that's the kind of money that's sort of bankrolling this show. So if that doesn't give you an idea, I'm not sure what will. But without further ado, let's get into the first step.
Renegade opens with Supercop Reno Raines pleading his case in front of Lieutenant Dutch Dixon, trying to blow the lid on corrupt cop Detective Burrell. Dixon is dismissive of Raines, but Reno just wants to get it all over with so he can retire and marry his fiancée, Val.
Somebody better red flag Sergeant Burrell before he jumps a divider and hits your police pension. He's setting up murder contracts and robberies, and I can give you first-person testimony to that effect.
Meanwhile, Burrell is trying to cover his tracks and releases criminal Hog Adams, who Reno put away years ago, to find and kill Reno. The assassination attempt goes sideways and Val, Reno's fiancé, is shot. Adams escapes and Reno takes Val to the hospital. As all of this is going on, Burrell is murdered by Lieutenant Dutch Dixon in order to frame Reno, and it is revealed Dixon is the real criminal.
There's a dead cop in your room, Reno. It's Sergeant Burrell. He was handcuffed. They found a gun by his body. It's yours. You're being set up, man. You gotta get out of here.
Reno is forced to go on the lam, and Dixon hires a bounty hunter, Bobby Sixkiller, and his sister, Cheyenne, to bring Reno in. While on the run, Reno is looking to get revenge on Hog Adams, and is able to catch up with his old foe, but they are both captured by Bobby soon after. Reno and Bobby decide to team up, and somehow manage to apprehend 30-odd bikers, save Cheyenne, and become partners all in one hit.
Any bond where we assist in the apprehension will charge an additional 10%. That sound fair?
Fair enough.
He would have needed to lay some serious groundwork to cover up his identity, because he is a wanted man for a very high profile crime, and he's the least conspicuous man in America.
He's flowing
glorious locks, that incredible knee length duster, and that gigantic bike that he's just roaring around on. You'd spot him from like states away.
It's ridiculous. It's like the one thing you have to do as a like someone on the lam is change your identity, change your look.
Yeah.
And he change the way he looks. He's not going to do it.
He's the most distinctive looking
police officer.
He doubles down on the look.
he doubles down.
Is it like hiding in plain sight? Is that what he's going for? Mm. If I look so much like Reno Raines,
they'll assume that I'm not.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, that guy's, that is too obvious.
Couldn't be. Why would he have to say, it's ridiculous.
He's completely out of his mind. And like, just get a haircut, grow a beard, just like something. Like, and also
does,
don't stay within like 100 kilometers.
Does growing your hair twice as long count as a haircut?
I guess so. But don't stay so close to where like the scene of the crime. He seems, the geographical sort of sense of the show is all over the map. So I don't really know how close and how far away they are, but It seems like he's within 100 kilometers of San Diego where it all goes down. Yeah. And he just never really leaves.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, like, these are very simple things he could do just to get away, but he kind of chooses not to do them. But do you think he was going... Do you think the reason he didn't want to shave his head is because Billy Ray Cyrus was really popular around that time and he's going for the real Billy Ray Cyrus look?
Could do.
Just Billy Ray Cyrus was going for the Reno Raines look. Let's be
clear. Oh, you're right.
Yeah, credit where credit's due. I don't think Billy Ray has those kind of locks.
Not at all. Not even close. He wishes. So... Couple of things. The main thing I think we need to mention is the fact that the pilot sets up the premise for the show, which is he's on the run from the law because he was about to expose a bunch of crooked cops. They tried to kill him and they ended up killing his fiance or putting her in a coma. I'm assuming she dies at some point throughout the show. And then he has to go on the run because they frame him for a murder of someone else. before that actually happens in the pilot to set up the show, they reveal that in the opening credits.
He was a cop and good at his job, but he committed the ultimate sin and testified against other cops gone bad. Cops that tried to kill him, but got the woman he loved instead. Framed for murder, now he prowls the Badlands, an outlaw hunting outlaws, a bounty hunter, a renegade.
Yes.
So the opening credits has a voiceover that tells you all of this stuff, and then they play it out the show. Like, let it happen.
It's like the nanny.
It's exactly like the nanny. That's exactly what I was thinking about. Like,
it's so bizarre.
Just don't play the intro in the first episode. Play in the second episode. Yeah. Why do you need it?
They might like just skip it all and be like, okay, I guess we just like into episodic bounty hunting, but no.
Or just play it straight up first.
And
then I kept thinking that we were maybe coming into this like episode 3 because it didn't make any sense. I was so confused. The other thing they could do is just have a 10-minute cold open. They have this 3-minute cold open, which is them mucking around on the beach and him surfing, which has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the show because he never surfs again, and he's got a surfboard that he dumps down in the sand, and it
says
like,
renegade.
It says renegade on it.
He's big on branding.
It's essentially none of this has happened yet.
I'd say this is a Stu Segal thing, because that opening is essentially softcore porn. Just so many shots, like just
they're rolling around
shots
in the surf
of his
making
wife.
Out. I thought that
it's like From Here to Eternity. It's absurd.
I wouldn't have.
You get a lot of upshot on Renault as well. They're riding real high.
Do you think Jez that originally Stu Segal would have been like, all right, we cut away. But we show everything.
There's a full penetration scene, solving crimes. The studio cut it from the final version. But he's got it on tape at home.
Directors, 100% cut.
Yeah, I think it's based. Maybe this whole show is a spin-off of just a porn he filmed of a beach sex scene. Then they just like spun out 5 seasons from that.
Almost definitely. The other thing is that like this is definitely a huge inspiration for It's Always Sunny. Like the duster
massively.
And the
This
what,
so
what
many,
you were just
this,
saying as well, Morgs. It's
the locks,
I feel like
the
this
duster,
is the show that
the duster. Yeah, there's so much of their jokes are just based on this particular. Maybe not this style of show, but it feels like exactly this show. But it feels like this exact show, like. That Reno Reigns jacket, Max wearing that, and Mac is the sort of character that would love Reno Reigns.
And then, so when he escapes with his girlfriend who's been shot. So first of all, this guy, this police officer, corrupt police officer, breaks this guy out of prison, lets this guy out of jail, basically, who is just like this big cross-eyed brute.
I didn't think God could make nothing so ugly. Went and drew pictures all over yourself with green ink. You're a regular walking piece of graffiti, you know that, boy?
You don't stop singing to me, I'm going to suck your brain out.
Hog Adams. Played as Hog Adams.
And then when Hog Adams goes and kills Reno's fiance, Reno on the run, and then it like cuts to a scene of him watching a TV report, or is he on the phone? I can't remember.
Police have issued an all-points murder warrant for Sergeant Reno Reigns.
But he's motorbikes in his hotel room. It doesn't
it's
make any
in the
sense.
Room. Classic.
Yeah, right in the
it's Fonz. That's classic Fonz move. That's classic Fonz power move. Yeah, you keep the bike
like
the in
the room, floor,
ready to go.
Yeah, what the hell?
Does he go?
Even if it's his house, it doesn't make sense because it's in his bedroom.
Jez,
do you have to book for two? Is he like, can I have a twin?
Well, it's a double room, you know. So.
Jez, I can almost guarantee
bring it up in the freight elevator?
At some point in this show, he's riding that bike out of the 8th story of a hotel. Room.
Oh, for sure.
He's doing
there is definitely I can see it in my mind, a shot of him just exploding through the window. I thought you were gonna say there is a scene where he makes love to the motorbike, but
yeah, it's him and the bike rolling around in the surf.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man.
It's real self lens, full penetration.
Gotta bring it up into the hotel room. Gotta dismantle it and then reassemble it in my hotel room. Sneak it up in like, you know, a bunch of different suitcases.
I mean, there's a lot of big script flaws, which we're going to keep going through because like, there's
the
one in particular.
One.
There's a massive one. I'm going to bring up later.
Creators of the show had the concept of a motorbike explained to them, rather than knowing what a motorbike was. Well, like, oh yeah, you know, a motorbike's like an extension of yourself. Like, extension of yourself. that would mean that you would have it, you know, in your bedroom.
At all times.
I just don't get it.
But the fact that that corrupt cop, the guy that gets him, I looked up that actor that plays him. I looked him up and God, he looks familiar. He plays Babe Ruth in The Sandlot.
Really?
Jesus.
Yeah. I'm like, oh.
That would have been around a similar time as well.
It's a weird
The
cross-eyed guy or the...
No, the detective.
The cross-eyed guy was also a cop. He was a cop. They said at the start he was a cop.
The bikey?
Reno put him away.
And Reno put him away for killing someone.
Yeah.
The guy, the giant brute with the cross-eyed.
Wasn't that just in the intro saying that he was trying to put bad cops away? Because that's the whole setup of the show, right? There's a dirty cop and he's trying to put him away. And then the dirty cop gets this guy out of prison, this bikie out of prison, to kill Reno.
I don't think he's a bikie, though. I'm pretty sure Reno put him away.
He goes and hangs out with bikies.
Yeah, he goes to a shit den where all these guys in leather and women in leather bikinis are just laying around sleeping, apparently 23 hours a day.
That's what...
Wait, don't get too... So, you're conflating two different biker scenes. So, there's one where Reno goes to the biker bar to hunt this guy down.
Yeah.
And he's, like, posted up behind a rock watching that scene take place where they're all, like, smashing beers and scantily clad women and all of that. And he loads his shotgun, Reno does, when he's watching them. And then it cuts back to the scene of them, you know, frivolous biker activities. And then it cuts back and he's eating beans out of a tin.
Yeah, what's with that?
He's staking them out, about to ambush them, and he just starts eating beans. And then it cuts back to the biker bar. And then it cuts back to Reno and he's having a nap. He eats the beans.
Beans make you sleepy.
And he dreams about his dead fiance. It's so fucking stupid. Like, he's on the tail of this guy. And just when he's about to spring them at the biker bar...
And
he eats some beans and has a nap.
And the next day, when he's kidnapped Hog Adams, he falls asleep again and he gets sprung by a six killer.
I think you're gonna need these. Ain't we having some fun now?
And then the next day, when they ambush the bikers, they're all like having this big kind of siesta in the middle of a
this
view.
Show. All of them first and foremost
and
is about sleep.
Broad daylight.
Yeah. What have they been doing?
And he posts it on the motorbike.
And they are out. Yeah, they are insane. Not. Like,
the bikers
up
are
for
all
tucking
out. They just all have a big old sleep.
And these boys party hard. They sleep hard.
They smash beans and then have a nap for 23 hours.
Honestly, you this would be them. So hard to. This would be so hard to, like, I just to explain this to people, the second biker scene, when he goes back to get them, they're partying the night before, and then they all just sleep. They fall asleep.
It's like
they're
The Sims. They just sleep at 11.
They're just lying in fields. They're just lying around, and he just comes up and grabs it. And it looks like it's like 11 o'clock in the morning. It's broad daylight.
It's night time, and him and Bobby are watching them. And Bobby's like, let's go. And then Reno's like, no, wait till they're asleep. It'd be way easier. And you assume that it'll be later in the night. But no, like you said, Morgan.
It's 8 o'clock in the morning.
It's midday. Furthermore, all the women there are these really young, good-looking women. And all the bikies are these disgusting, decrepit old men. I'm like, I don't know what situation this is. It's bizarre.
That I need to say is... The first biker bar scene, after he eats the beans and has like a nap and dreams about his fiance, then he's like, all right, time to go get, what was his name? Not Hound.
Hog.
He's like, all right, now I'm going to go get Hog. He goes up to Hog and he puts the shotgun to his head and he says to him, because again, for whatever reason, bikers just seem to fall asleep on the spot where they were drinking and they're all like strewn across the floor asleep. Puts his gun to Hog's head and says,
good morning. Any one of these primates wake up, and I'm going to spread your arithmetic all over.
What arithmetic? What the hell is that?
What are you? Who's
what kind of bread is that?
It's like and
I'm pretty sure. Like, there's a guy. There's like four guys sleeping within a meter, and they do not move.
Yeah, they're just.
He's just talking.
Passed out on the floor.
The show has like little like. There's weird moments where, and it happens a lot in the last the finale where. They start a scene and a character's just kind of standing around waiting, like as if it's like, you know, like the way you just walking around waiting for a person to show up. Like, you're not doing anything else. And this happens a lot, even, like, it's just, like, every situation that is written in, it's just waiting, it's waiting to happen. So everyone's just waiting there for to interact.
The only other thing that they, the only other way they have to get into a scene is somebody waking up. That's the only other way.
How do we end this? How do we start the scene?
Maybe this is a, like an adult film industry hangover. They're just like, I don't know how you start. Like, usually they wake up and then they fuck. Like, that's how it goes.
And when they're done fucking, they fall asleep.
Yeah.
Like,
have some beans out of a tin. They wake up, they have the sex, they crack a can of beans, straight back to sleep.
And repeat.
Do it all over again the next day.
we need to circle back to Bobby, because we haven't talked about Bobby. Yeah, we haven't talked really about Bobby yet. And so the introduction of Bobby, so we've already...
Sell him to the listeners more. It's really... So, paint a picture. Like,
Bobby's basically the best. I love Bobby. He's the best character by far.
Bobby dresses like a casino owner in Las Vegas.
Mixed with Prince.
Mixed with Prince. He's like, everything's like these bright colored blazers with like with tight jeans.
And huge dangly earrings.
And his sister's like some... He's Native American, and his sister looks like she's from, you know, Stockholm, and which is, you know, that's well, I can tell you the woman that played his sister was actually Lorenzo Lamas's wife in real life.
Oh yeah,
I got some good facts which I'll tell post.
Hence the chemistry in the first episode.
Yeah, I got some great tidbits that I can give you more information about that. I did some more extra reading on that marriage. Let's just say it's a flaming dumpster fire.
The court proceedings, I'm guessing.
But yeah, it didn't go well. But Bobby's like, you know, got the huge mullet. One of the notes I have is that one of the things that aged best in this show is Bobby's hair. That mullet's come full circle. It's back.
It's coming
fashion.
Back. Like, if Bobby walked onto an AFL field right now, he'd be king of the league.
He's rocking the Bailey Smith.
Yeah.
Oh, massively. But it's a lot more full, and it looks like he conditions his, whereas Bailey Smith is disgusting. But he's a bounty hunter who Dutch Dixon just recruits to basically hunt down Reno.
I need this guy yesterday. Henry comes back to me in a body bag. That's not going to tear me up either.
Well, I generally don't like to kill my bounties. I like to bring them back alive.
But he's a bounty hunter whose home base is an RV that he drives around in that has a trailer with his convertible, like, he tows his 67 Chev around with the... Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Got to keep it in mint condition.
It's so uncool. Why don't you just drive the convertible? Instead, he's got a mobile home, like a Winnebago, where he tows the...
It's outrageous.
It makes no sense.
And the fact that he's obviously in a lot of high pressure situations where he needs to get out fast. He's driving this giant RV, towing another car behind him.
0 to 100 in like 4 minutes.
Oh, man. No wonder the bike... There's a scene where he's trying to escape the bikies and they run him down in like 2 seconds.
Obviously.
It barely cracks 50 going downhill. Like, it's the slowest...
It'd be a bit more efficient with the convertible towing the RV.
Exactly. Just drive the convertible.
You don't need. He doesn't need to have the RV. Like, you just like that scene where they catch with the bike. He's in. Okay. Reno captures Hog. I want to say Hoggish Greeley.
Yeah, that's where my mind's going.
He captures Hog and then. And then Reno falls asleep at a gas station.
Obviously.
Like,
yeah, why?
Then gets caught by Bobby, who then they're in handcuffs. And then the bikies, like, so they pull over and the bikies catch up. Reno runs off with handcuffs into the desert. The bikies then descend upon the RV, catch up, pull it over. And then when she's like, what do we do? Don't worry, I'll figure something out. Bobby goes outside to fight the 50 bikies, gets captured immediately because he's one guy.
But I tell you what, all you guys follow me over to Bakersfield, I'll buy you all a drink. On me, no problem.
It won't be fun without old Hog to make the first toast.
Hog? I know Hog. He's a very good friend of mine.
And then Reno comes back from the desert, no handcuffs. How the and fuck did he get the handcuffs off?
Fly kicks the biggest one of them off the script. Fly kicks one of them off the bike.
Yeah.
He just stayed behind for no particular reason.
And then
instantly they've changed gears from captor and captive to partners for life. They have like a blood bond from the moment he comes back.
Oh, well. He saves Bobby later from the bikers as well, right? Bobby gets shot and then Reno comes
in and picks
him up.
But it's like as soon as
But it's not very well fleshed out, that alliance, because
comes out of nowhere.
Because there's no incentive for Reno, should have just left, because this guy's trying to bring him in. He should have just bailed and go, the bikers
should
take care of him, I'm out of here.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, he's got a heart of gold. And that's still, his downfall.
This,
and a scalp of gold.
And this is the most outrageous part of the episode for me, which is what happens next. So the bikies sort of, they abduct Bobby's sister, right? And then
Cheyenne.
Like, yeah. And then they, I can't remember the exact order of what happens, but the bikies are like chasing Bobby and a renegade man. Oh God, what's his name?
Reno.
I don't know how about that. Chasing Bobby and Reno. And then they set up like some kind of sort of like equivalent of like a 10-year-old's trap, where they kind of, they put the rope across and then end up like, you know, intercepting the bikies and they all fall off their bikes. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, they're just going to get away. No. Bobby and
Reno
walk up behind, shotgun in hand. All of these bikies have guns. And just say,
all right, everybody get on the ground. Let's go. Come on, right now. Let me keep killing.
And like 30 armed bikies are like, oh, well, I guess this is the point where we give up.
We're being got.
At which point
then.
Yeah,
they all just comply.
Like, at which point then Bobby's like,
all right, let's get these guys ready for court.
Hard cut. And they're all in jail. How the fuck did he get them from being there? In the middle of nowhere? 30 to 2 to being in jail. What?
They bought them all nice suits. And
it was a bizarre play. Like, that is so ballsy to just one gun against 30 bikies. It's outrageous.
Just get your sister and get out.
Just leave. Yeah.
Just leave.
Bobby can't pass up a good bounty.
Maybe that's why he has the RV. He needs to house 30 bikies. He's always picking up this entire squad.
Technically, what crime have they committed?
Yeah,
well,
exactly. What proof do they even have?
Because they're chasing
Grand
him,
theft
who is
beans.
Also doing something illegal. Like, they're all doing the wrong thing.
There's one thing that aged well in this show. They take a swipe at Donald Trump.
George Foreman, a black man raised in the ghetto, eats hamburgers, wins millions. Donald Trump, a white man raised in a mansion, eats caviar, loses millions. Ah, what a great country we live in here, Lieutenant. Where everybody gets a spin at that wheel.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. That was a great burn.
That's a great burn.
Very poignant.
Yeah. Bobby Six Killer, 2020 presidency campaign.
Mm.
What a nice.
It's not too late.
It's not too late.
Loves telling racist jokes and wearing pastel colored suit jackets.
There's this Indian laying in the sun. And this tenderfoot walks up and says, "Why ain't you working?" And the Indian says, "Why should I work?" The tenderfoot says, "You should work so you can earn money. You earn money, you save it, put it in the bank, you earn more money. You work, you earn, you save, and by the time you're 50, you don't have to work anymore." And the Indian says, "Me no work now."
I like that though. He was, you know, he was using his, what he assumed people were going to, you know, come at him with as his own armor.
Beating to the punch.
It was, Bobby.
That was good. What I was going to say before, Jez, that Bobby is also a fan of is abandoning his sister. So when he escaped with Reno, he just legged it out into the desert, leaving her to the mercy of 30 bikers. What is going to happen there? That's not ending well.
I know what's going to happen there. It's not a dark storyline.
Dark stuff.
I mean, obviously, they all just went back to their hideout and went to sleep for 50 hours because that's what bikers do.
Yeah. Had a can of beans.
But it could have been real bad.
How much meth are they having to sleep 23 hours a day? Like, that is just... The sleeping thing, I'm glad you guys picked up on that as well, because that was just
they've
ludicrous.
Got a higher sleep to wake ratio than, like, a kitten.
Yeah.
They think they're smoking meth, but they're really just smoking sleeping tablets.
Yeah. This is a hell of a first episode.
Oh, man.
It's out of control.
It's so good. Seriously,
but like, when I just cannot get past, and I'm going to bring it up again just quickly, when Reno runs into the desert and comes back with no handcuffs. Like, not a... Like he's in the desert.
Doesn't just come back, Morgs.
No possible way. Like, it's out of control. There's no trace of them.
Fly kicks a biker off his bike and takes his bike. He doesn't just come back.
Is he, like, just catching up to the bikers, just running at the same speed? And then just comes in from the side.
He should
just... Barry Gibb style.
Barry Gibb style. The fastest man alive.
It's the hair. It's got to be in the hair. That increases your speed tenfold.
There's so many things in this show that's like, you just kind of, like... It doesn't really explain everything. It's like it gets 70% of the way there. It's like, oh, you know, like he just kind
that's
of...
That's enough. You get the idea. You've got the imagination.
Like, we don't need to worry about it. Yeah. He escapes and then he's able to, you know, able to just make it happen.
He's going to try off
like,
again.
It's like, again, like with the 30 bikers, like what happens in between getting these guys from that situation where you've disarmed them to then the 30 of them, the two of you... Moving the 30 of them to court. What's the proceeding between now and then? Because I just don't like the situation.
Time all up. Chuck them in the RV. Give them a can of beans so they fall asleep. And
one bean each.
Story writes itself.
One
magic
bean
can of sleeping beans.
The old sleep beans. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, that was
a delicacy around those parts.
That's a hell of a first episode. But look, maybe we move into the finale.
Let's do it.
After 5 seasons of what are presumably balls-to-the-wall adventures, our man Reno is still on the run with Dutch Dixon on his tail. But there's a third player in this game, Dixon's son Donnie, who breaks out of prison to avenge his mother's death.
Do it, Donnie. Do it for your mother.
Do what, Mom?
Kill the man who killed me.
He thinks Reno is the killer, but surprise, surprise, it's actually his father Dutch who pulled the trigger. After a riverside encounter with Reno, young Donnie discovers the truth, and with the help of a random FBI agent, they set up a sting to catch Dixon out once and for all.
I'll give you all the proof you'll ever need, and if I'm lying, you can turn me in. I won't run.
But the sting is a botch job, and after killing the FBI agent, Dixon escapes and is now on the run just like Reno. And with Bobby Six Killer and Reno right behind him, the show ends with a ride off into the sunset and one final bounty to collect.
Well, let me ask you a question. What should we do? Should we, like, go get him right now, or should we give him a taste of your life?
Well, you know, that's a tough choice.
Yes, it is, sir.
I think we should nail him right now.
Can we start from the end of this? That sting, the whole the whole setup of Donnie trying to get his dad to incriminate himself is so poorly executed.
It could go wrong so easily. So easily. He could just get killed.
He's pointing a gun. He's ready to fire at his son. Yeah. And they're just like in the other room waiting to jump in.
He's going
to
say it.
And when the time comes, they completely botch it.
That is catastrophic, that sting.
And the way that Donnie goes down, is he's like, he's in cover and then he just runs for no reason out of cover and his dad just takes him out. It's like, what are you doing, Donnie? Just hunker down. And the other thing is, was the part of the plan for Donnie to be such a shit aim because he confronts his dad. First of all, we're skipping
Much
more stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
we'll get back the way to the shit aim of Donnie.
The way that he alerts into the fact that he's ambushing his dad is his dad comes home and checks his messages. And there's like some lusty lady sends him something about wearing his favorite red teddy and she's in bed and he like skips over it.
Dutch, it's Rebecca. I'm in bed and I'm not wearing anything but that red teddy you like so much.
And then Donnie says, hey, Dad, it's me. I'm in the house. And then there's like another message. It's like, I'm in the house. Look around. And then he looks over and Donnie's there. He's like, hey, Dad.
Hello.
Me.
Guess who, Dad? Don't look now, but I'm right over here. Right over here.
And I mean right over here. This one's from Mom.
They set up Donnie to get the confession from Dutch. And then when shit starts going down, he starts firing. They could have positioned themselves so easily to completely neutralize the situation. But instead, they enter from like, they come down the stairs from like a weird angle off to the side. where they have no visibility of him. He's like next to a gun case. He's got a corridor to the exit behind him. Why did they set it up like that?
Also, the one person that cannot die in this situation, that cannot get shot, is Hendrix. He's the only one who really needs to survive.
And he's down just like
waving his gun and gets killed.
No body armor.
Takes one of the chests straight away.
He knows that if he gets caught by Hendrix, Dutch has nothing to lose, man. And completely just comes in half cocked and gets gunned down immediately. It is just insane. And now, and the thing is, he's in a coma. Basically, they're at square one again because
they've lost.
Because
it all.
Dutch can just cover this all up because it was all off the books. Why is it off the books?
Doesn't you guys even the think?
The other scene with Donnie and guns is when he ambushes Reno when he's at his having his like al fresco little dining session. By the river.
Yeah.
And he's just like firing away and he's like blowing. There's like a jar of sauce that blows up and then he like hits his frying pan a couple of times. And then he like hits a cub, hits this rock. He's just, Donnie's just not made out.
Also, he's not. But
he never reloads.
In that scene where he's after the answering machine with Dutch, obviously he's missing to, so the ambush, like, so Dutch has a chance to make his confession. So that's part of it. But he's like 4 feet away, and surely if someone is pointing a gun at you from that close and then they miss six times just flailing around, you're going to think something's up.
Mm.
You're not going to be
I thought that. I thought the plan... The plan was for Donnie to get Dutch to confess when Donnie had his gun on Dutch.
No, it was that Dutch was going to be about to kill Donnie, and Donnie is like a dying wish.
Oh, that
be
was
like, you killed
that
mum,
was the
didn't
plan.
You?
That was the plan.
Yeah, yeah. Which while these guys wait up the stairs plan. And just leave Dutch an opening to escape.
That's very problematic within itself.
Because he's just going to kill Donnie. I think you said this before. As soon as he does, Hendrix is upstairs, and it's like there's the three of them standing there, right? Hendrix, Bobby, and Reno, and then you just like see like Hendrix's face is like, oh shit. Oh, I got to do something now. Like, what? How do you not have any backup? You've not thought this through at all.
Is it just daydreaming for this whole plan? About, no, that sounds good.
Too many beans.
And Hendrix is also, he's working with a bounty hunter and two criminals, essentially. Because Reno, as far as he knows, is a criminal and has been on the run for 5 years.
Mm.
He's just put his faith, I'm going to try and take out this police lieutenant using two criminals and a bounty hunter. Like the plan is
not just a criminal, a guy that has just escaped from prison.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. By killing a prison guard.
Murdered a prison guard for seemingly, because they don't know about the bribe, seemingly no reason.
No reason.
Just murdered a prison guard.
Yeah. Can we talk about what is in Dutch Dixon's gun also? Like, what are those bullets? When he shoots Hendrix flies back about four and a half meters. It's like a rocket launcher.
Yeah, I thought what you were going to say was there's two times where he goes to pull the trigger and it just clicks. So he's obviously got like a blank loaded in for every like third bullet.
Maybe it's like charging up. He can bank all the power from other bullets into this one super bullet that'll just clicks blast the other
him. Like a Mauler from Perfect Dark.
Exactly.
And once it starts flowing red, then he shoots Hendrix, and Hendrix goes as Scott said.
That's exactly what it was. The Mauler from Perfect Dark.
That was just another prime example. We didn't touch on it in the first episode, but some fabulous use of slow motion.
Oh yeah,
they jammed that in every chance they could get.
The best part is when they realize after Hendrix gets shot across the room and they realize they got to get out of there because the police are coming, and Bobby's like, get out of here. I would say the most distinctive thing in this show is Reno's bike, and then they notice Reno's bike is actually parked out front of the house of Dixon. Dixon drives into the inn, unsuspectedly walks through his front door, doesn't notice the man he's been chasing for 5 years, motorbike, the most distinctive thing on the planet.
The motorbike that he sleeps next to every night.
He's on the street and doesn't bat an eyelid.
And then Reno's down the end of this cul-de-sac with the sirens coming. He's got to drive out of this like one-way suburban court. The cops are going to find him. You're going to pass him.
And it's also the loudest fucking bike on the planet.
It's so
conspicuous.
It's so conspicuous. It's got, it's like a chopper like, with flames. It's got all these customizations.
They may as well have driven fucking Bobby's RV in there and parked it across the street. It's like, they're not going to get away with this. But Dixon somehow just doesn't notice. And he just walks in there. Just, oh, God. It's, we need to circle back to the start of this because also, just unrelated, Donnie.
Mm.
Kind of looks like Peter Dinklage. Was that just me?
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, you gotta do those parts. Yeah. Yep.
But when did the show... I got really excited at the start of this when Donnie... So basically the whole story of this is Donnie's mother appears to him as a ghost to tell him to avenge her death. Doesn't explain anything else, but... I got really excited that it was going that the show had gone full Baywatch Nights and it just became into a supernatural show.
It went partway. Like, it was, there's
it
no denying that.
There. It was pretty full
but
on.
But I would argue, I'd be interested to see if any other episodes had a supernatural element like that one just brought in. Or that was just a plot device for that particular episode.
He has a lot of... I reckon his fiancée would have appeared before Reno at some point. And in like a vision.
Yeah, 100% they're going to work in some American Indian mysticism.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
In that scene where Donnie's talking to his ghost mum, he says the word mum, I think almost literally every sentence. It's like, is that you, mum? Mum, are you bleeding? What do you want me to do, mum? Mum?
Mum? What are you doing here, mum? They told me you were dead, mum. What do you mean, mum? You're bleeding, mum.
Do what, mum?
Mum?
That's great writing, yeah. Aaron, because there's nothing for interpretation. They're very, very deliberate about.
I would have got distracted like Hickson. Listening to a plan, you just lose track unless someone really keeps you focused.
Who am I looking at again?
Who is this one? Mum?
Mum.
So can we discuss, there's this scene where a couple of times Bobby goes to visit Reno, who's just like camped out down by the river.
Yes.
Just
that's what he does. This is their new opening for scenes, is that he's like washing his hands in the river. Cooking something the river.
He's cooking eggs. And he just like... Bobby just comes in to chat to him. And he just gives him a plate of eggs. And they both sit down and eat it. But if you look... They've used like a take that's not... It's a bad take. They should have reshot it. Because he's like... He's got the... He serves them both eggs. And he puts the spatula in the pan. And then he just accidentally knocks the spatula. It goes flying. And they just like, they're just like, all right, we'll just leave it in. It's fine. And he doesn't address it. He's just like completely focused on.
Jez, this is a part so of his laissez-faire.
But that was.
I had to rewind it a couple of times. I'm like, hang on. He's just like launched it because it creates like a bit of a fulcrum on the edge of the pan and he knocks it and it just like goes spiraling off and they just, he doesn't address it.
That was the most convincing of the. Like, because Bobby goes back to Reno's campsite. So apparently Reno just lives outside.
We need to talk about that.
Lives by the river.
That's one thing within itself. But
the other times
he comes to visit him, Reno's just walking around with his duster on, full, just kind of walking around. Like, literally, like he's standing there, and then Bobby turns up. Like
at a public campsite near the
public
river.
Public campsite. He's not doing anything else. He's literally just walking around. To wait for Bobby to arrive. Like, it's the most natural way a conversation would start.
It's like he's an NPC and Bobby needs to walk up and activate him.
Activate the scene, yeah.
It's like, oh, Bobby, would you like some eggs?
when all of the setups for every conversation, like you said, Morgs, it's all completely unnatural NPC.
He's not sitting there reading
a book or, you know, doing something.
Yeah, just
basically sitting there waiting for the... Hello, traveler.
I've got a theory about why Reno's constantly outside, which is it's not got anything to do with him trying to be inconspicuous and hide from people because obviously he doesn't give a shit about that.
Yep.
I reckon just no hotel chain will take him because he insists on bringing the bike into the room.
He's been blacklisted.
He's dragging oil all up the stairs.
Every room he rents, he needs to pay like a $300 carpet cleaning bond. So I've heard about you, Reno.
I thought you were going to say he needs to maintain the windswept hair by being in the wind.
Oh, yeah.
100% of the time.
I mean, that lakeside lifestyle is very conducive to that. It's a bizarre setup. So he's just got like a blanket next to this huge rock with his pan, some eggs, and a shotgun just leaning next to it. Yeah, is that how he lives?
That's
how he lives.
Just sleeps up with a shotgun.
NPC life.
And
NPC
like,
life.
Even if somebody who's driving by or walking by or whatever, doesn't recognize you as Reno the cop killer.
Yeah.
Just a dude
who,
like, just,
wait,
who's just got a gun?
This
like,
dude with a flamed up Harley with a shotgun living by a lake.
I mean, I'm like, oh, I'm probably going to call the cops on this guy, I reckon.
On that point, Scott, they mentioned a couple of times in the episode, in like through exposition that's done with a newscast, how he's the most infamous criminal on the run in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's just some guy who is, you know, like some vagrant who's camping by the river. He's supposedly, in this world, the most infamous fugitive there is.
Number one on the FBI's most wanted.
Just chuck the shotgun against the rock there.
And it's not in the wilderness. It's like next to a seemingly like busy-ish suburban road.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like it's a park. He's just camped out in a
park. It takes Bobby like 2 minutes to drive there from his house, you know?
He has to be so close, and Dixon's not that far away either. So it's almost like he's camped out.
It's just like a public reserve. It's just a park with a playground, you know, in the middle of a built-up suburban neighborhood where some guy's just camping out with a shotgun.
And so when he has the gunfight with Donnie, when Donnie turns up to confront him, before I mention this, I want to go back. I'll mention this. When Donnie turns up, so that would be so loud, that gunfight.
Mm.
And people would report that immediately. Donnie's got this automatic rifle, which would be loud as hell. That gunfight, he has such a... It keeps switching
getting
back
cover!
His
yes!
View.
He's got clear...
He's so exposed.
It's just his entire left side is just open.
So he gets clipped and then he doesn't run behind
doesn't
cover.
Move.
He's just like
he just takes the shot
the
and stays there.
But Donnie
doesn't know his way around guns. Because earlier when he's at Dutch's house to get the guns... He's holding the pistol and the rifle, and he's holding the rifle by the front of the barrel.
Dual wheel.
It's like it's like you know the trigger's further down back, right? Like, you're not gonna it's like what are you doing? That's why Dixon's so like not.
Why does he need both? Why does he need both? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like, what? But now that we've sort of gone back to this, I want to talk again about Donnie.
Before we're not done with the river scene, there was one thing I forgot.
I apologize.
When Reno's, you know, hiding in cover, air quotes, and Donnie's trying to take him out, and they're having a conversation from distance as Donnie's trying to kill him. Reno reveals that he wasn't the one that killed his mum. It was his dad.
Yep.
Dutch, and there's like this little internal dialogue that Donnie vocalizes, and he's like,
"All right, then you didn't kill her. Tell me who did."
Oh my god! Oh my god!
And then it cuts to him like,
if he's thinking of that now. How has he not thought of that previously?
Yeah, yeah. That revelation is triggered so quickly.
The penny drops and the...
Oh, my God.
I mean, hell-bent on killing this man because of a vision of my mother I had. But no, I'm turning around right now.
Yeah, that realization is out of control. He just comes to it so quickly.
Oh my god! Yeah. Needs to be in our opening credits.
But the thing is though, if it's not Reno Raines, how can the only other culprit be his dad? Like, are they the only two people
he knows? I think
it's like, well, if it's not Reno Raines, it has to be my father because no one else would have murdered my mother other than Reno.
His
Raines,
dad was getting into the skin game. His dad was getting into the skin game.
So I want to talk more about
the skin trade. That's how he went crooked.
Well, that poor woman took all the abuse and neglect she could possibly stand. She comes home on their silver anniversary to find him setting up porno deals in the den.
My vice guys were worried that Dutch was going into the skin trade.
And they busted his... They cancelled his video orgy. It's one of the lines.
Yeah, the video orgy. What the fuck is that?
Oh, I don't know. something corrupt.
That's
where the money is.
But he smelled us coming. He cancelled his video orgy and set up some policeman's fundraiser. He wanted a lot of witnesses.
That's a Stu Segal input right there.
Oh yeah.
Can we talk about? I want to talk about
definitely.
You can kind of probably one of my favorite outfits of the whole of the two episodes we watched. There's a lot of good fashion in this, but my favorite one was Dutch Dixon's at home like tracksuit outfit that he's wearing.
Yeah.
When
sleeveless.
The cutoffs, and he's just sitting there trimming his goatee. That goatee is ludicrous. I've said that a lot, but that goatee is bananas. It's so thick, and he's just trimming his goatee, wearing like a muscle shirt.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It is not befitting of a graying man in his 50s.
Not at all.
And to go from like the pinstripe suit to that, that change in gears is so jarring.
It's out of control. And then like what is Dutch Dixon's character? Like the women
he's,
ringing him
he,
and leaving messages
he,
on his Morgs, phone.
He's the character that the guy who wrote the show
plays
became. So it makes so much sense. Like everything, he's the perfect villain who just sits there at a cut-off tee shaving his goatee while he's just going through his message bank of all these women who are just saying professing their love to him. And saying, why can't you join me in bed, Dutch? Stroked his own ego so much in writing this character.
Oh, it's ludicrous.
He's got some real wild lines as well. When he's talking to Hickson, who's like,
I gotta suspend your butt right now.
Why? Because I don't want to turn in my own son.
Yeah, that's why he should suspend you. That's not okay. Your son committed murder. Just because he's your son doesn't give him a free pass.
You're tampering with the case.
Yeah. You're a police officer. Not only that, you're like one of the top guys in the fucking
I don't
US
think
Marshals.
I should be, I don't think I have to be telling you this. You should know this.
It's all very simple.
Guys, I've got bad news. I just got an email following my request to buy renegadeontv.com.
Oh no.
The now defunct website for the TV show.
Is that quick?
I think it's spam. I've got to call this guy.
Is his name Reno?
Or he can call me, but Todd Cantwell wants to chat about pricing.
we buy
get him on
Renegade TV.com.
Senior sales manager at GoDaddy. Oh, yeah, nice. We're gonna buy Renegade on TV.
We're gonna buy it. I wanna talk. Like let's talk to the guy. Talk to
it's an yeah, asset, right?
You have a conversation.
It's an investment in
the other line of Dutch Dixon's that stood out was when he was giving the confession saying why he killed his wife, he was like,
she did betray me. We said vows. She was supposed to stand by me.
She uncovered his scheme. She knew he was a crooked cop and he was in the skin trade and whatever else he was into. What were his vows? Like, were his vows like, you will stand by me between, like, health and skin trading?
And video orgies.
And video orgies. Like, this is the deal. You know what you're getting when you marry Dutch Dixon. If you want to be Mrs.
Out.
Dutch Dixon, this is what you're getting.
What you sign up for. This goatee doesn't come for free. All right? There's a lot of baggage attached to this impeccable goatee.
Just there at the altar in his sleeveless pinstripe tux.
I just quickly want to circle back once more back to the breakout of the chain gang scene with Donnie. You know when he does clock the prison guard, essentially kills him with that brick. Why does he leave the chains on? Like he runs away with the chains.
They have a shot where he picks the key up. The key obviously falls out of the guy's pockets in the scuffle, and they have a shot where he picks the key up, and then he just runs off in the chains.
Chains, yeah. Like, just,
Brother, where art thou style.
Yeah, it's like, you've got like maybe 5 minutes at a max before the other guards go, hey, they've been gone for a while. Let's go find
you're gonna
him.
You're gonna save. So it's a 10-second ordeal to unlock it.
You want to get out of those things immediately.
Like to 50%. Double your speed.
Yeah.
But apparently, he chooses not to.
This is a universe where once you're into the woods or off road, your chains just disappear. Handcuffs, chains, shackles—they're gone.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's true. The laws of like chains and locks just don't exist in this show.
Did they have chain gangs in the mid-90s?
They certainly did not, but apparently they did.
And the guard who he bribes is like so conspicuously just kind of announces to all the other guards.
Take this one into the woods!
And then they like shuffle off.
Also,
the other thing,
$1,000 to spring a prisoner, that's pretty good deal. Like, that's a good deal for the prisoner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
$20,000? It's not even worth the paperwork.
Like, that guard is... He's calling his job into serious question. Like,
yeah.
He's going down a long path that I don't think he's coming out of favorably.
And he's like... He's dead, oh, so. And well, Donnie's like, I'll hit you so that it'll make sense.
Oh, look, you show up back there with a grand in your pocket and no prisoner, even your dumbass pals are going to get suspicious.
No. But on the other hand, if I whack you gently in the head, you can just play on concho for a little while till they come looking for you. Might be worth a little Excedrin, don't you think?
I'll take my chances.
What is this guy going to say? Oh, he ran off.
I couldn't get him. He was too fast in those shackles.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What?
Yeah, who wants some frosty, yeah. frosty no, chocolate milkshakes on me? Down at the diner.
I'm buying.
The art of distraction.
Did you guys notice who directed this episode?
No.
It
was Branscombe Richmond, Bobby Six Killer.
He
directed this one and one other in season 4.
Hot damn.
Yeah.
Gave him the keys for the finale.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge.
What a name, by the way. Branscombe Richmond.
Yeah, there were some great names. There was a guy in the first episode called Art LaFleur.
that was the Sandlot guy I was talking about.
Art LaFleur.
LaFleur. Yeah, I think he's borderline in the Gary Young conversation. Borderline. Oh.
Destined to make it with a name like that. Same with Branscombe Richmond.
We've really covered a lot of ground.
Does
that take us to maybe like 5%? Of kind of what's going on in this show.
So it's a deep well.
We really could just... Sure. This is probably the first show where we could just do... We could do like a 3-episode arc where we just go through the first and last episode shot for shot. Yeah. It's just every single scene had like a 5-minute discussion that could stem from it. It's just insane.
There's a lot we haven't covered, but I don't think we can jam it in.
Mm. No. I think one of us needs to like put together a university course of... 101 of Renegade, where you can just every week just break down shot by shot. This is what's going on. Entire lecture theatre.
I could certainly pivot from my my thesis on John Lithgow to to work to Renegade.
There's some overlap.
It's either that or it's its own spin-off podcast.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh god.
TIS / Renegade.
There's a lot, and it's all available if you want to watch it. It's on streaming services.
It's all on Amazon Prime.
We don't usually encourage listeners to watch along, but this one...
I wouldn't...
Just go to renegadeontv.com.
Yeah. Also, we can't encourage our listeners to give money to Amazon.
That's true.
Find it through alternative means. Jeff Bezos doesn't need your... $7.99.
Oh, poor Jeff Bezos.
Oh, he's probably pulling it in from Renegade.
He's just trying to make a buck, man.
He's probably the one. He's probably shafting Renegade on TV.com from you right now. He's talking to Tom, head of sales.
I love this. The fact that when this got suggested to us, we were like, "How are we going to find this?" And I took a punt on looking on Amazon Prime. And I was so... I you have no idea how elated I was when I
is
found
there,
this.
Yeah, is there an audience? Like, how is the are fuck? People watching this?
I might. Hey, no.
I might be one.
Amazon Prime is great down here in Australia because there's so much content. Like, they just buy anything. It's like, well, we've got money.
It's quantity over quality.
Everything. Yeah. Because the problem
what are the rights?
A lot of the rights
to Renegade.
Well, it would cost nothing. It'd be so cheap, and it's like, well, we'll just chuck it on there. We'll buy it. We'll just have it available. So it's part of the catalog. Other ones just kind of rotate through things. They just buy it and keep it. It's glorious. So thank you to Amazon Prime for putting this on.
But
thank you, Jeff.
I am getting the distinct impression that some little alert has gone off from like the makers of this show that like they've had 4 views in the last week. Oh shit! Yeah. Here we go.
I can't imagine there'd be a lot of reviews. The only other thing I've seen Lorenzo Lamas in. Which
I think he's in Days of Our Life. Right?
Well, no, Jeremy, you're going to be excited about this. He's in an episode of The Eric Andre Show.
Oh.
I see.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As a guest. Really?
As a guest.
Go wake up Lorenzo Lamas. Dance for us. Dance. Yeah, that's it.
That's a good segment.
Tell us about your life story and stuff.
I was on TV in the 90s. I had a syndicated show.
Can you admit that you're responsible for Natalie Wood's death?
You said we weren't going to talk about that.
Well, I brought it up.
Okay, I was there. Well, what else do you want me to say? I was there. I heard the screams.
He was also in Grease.
Yeah, I don't remember. I have no idea what character
who
he is.
Even?
But he's in
who
it.
Who even is he?
I don't know. Tom Chisholm?
Name sounds familiar.
I haven't watched Grease in a while.
Ex-boyfriend of someone, maybe.
I actually watched Grease not that long ago, and I don't remember seeing him.
You would. That.
Pretty batshit ending.
You would.
I love... it's my birthday, so you can't get to...
Yeah,
you can't
true.
Make any... Can't,
no Travolta bashing on your birthday.
No Travolta bashing. I ask this for is, one thing.
This is one wish.
You leave John out of this on the 4th of October.
I mean, Grease is the Word is a banger of a song.
It's a banger of a song. Stands up. All right, well, look, we could... as we've talked about, we could talk about this... these two episodes, shot for shot, for hours. We don't have that sort of time, so we should probably go ahead and try and reboot this show.
Can I please... I know we say this a lot. Can I please go first with my reboot? Because it's pretty quick.
You may. Yep.
It's pretty simple.
All right, go for it.
Welcome to Channel 9's new talent game show, Serenade. And this is where we go to whatever the maximum security prison is. We find cop killers and they got to sing their way out of prison. So you just got like a couple of judges. We see how great their voices are. They pick their own songs. And if they do well enough, then they... maybe they don't get like... they get to be free, but they get released. And then they're on the lam until they kind of get caught
again.
So they get like a chance.
Yeah. Just a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well, I mean, we've already established from your future prison stint, Jeremy, that we'll still be able to podcast from there. So I assume there's a recording booth.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Get those dulcet tones.
So the infrastructure's there.
Mm-hmm.
Serenade.
I'd watch it.
Do you mind if I go second?
Please, by all means.
So my one is more of a tangible, I guess you could call reboot. So
what
I watched
saying?
This show. Well, I watched
this. Very
I watched this show.
Scott.
You'll know what I mean. Well, I watched the show. The thing that stood out to me most about this was the fashion, the duster, the at home where the everything about this show. So my
Lavender
reboot,
Blazers.
Yeah, my reboot is Renegade, the clothing line.
Yes.
Right down from your evening wear, which comes down to pastel blazers, bolo ties, and tight jeans for the more formal events, to something more practical for an everyday work vibe, like a full leather duster, tight jeans, cut-off sleeves.
A white t-shirt.
If you'll think that we stop there, we've got a very, very, very tidy, neat set of at-home wear,
intimate
which
wear.
Includes tracksuit pants with a cut with a cut-off shirt, tank top. For your at-home, more comfortable moments. So, Renegade the Clothing Wear encapsulates the modern man from 1992 and transports that to now. Renegade the Clothing Line.
Morgan, could you maybe make a suggestion for me? I am going to have a quiet evening at home. Maybe, you know, going to give the mustache a bit of a trim.
Yep.
And at some point, I think maybe my estranged son is going to come and try and kill me. What kind of outfit do you think would work for that sort of scenario?
Have you got something for that, Morgs?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Scott. So we have the Dutch at home, which is essentially a nice pair of grey tracksuit style pants combined with a matching charcoal tank top. Loose fitting around the shoulders.
Hoodie? Is there a hoodie on there?
There is a hood, but it's all t-shirt material. So you've got the lightweight ability to move to trim that goatee, because I know those situations are tough.
I love the design because it's clearly they've made the full sleeve and then they've like roughly cut it
off. They've removed
scissors.
It, yeah.
It's really authentic.
And look, I know what you're thinking. This is a men's brand. It's not. We've got some very tasteful women's wear.
Are they all bikinis? Because that was pretty much what every single woman in this show was wearing.
They are very tastefully made high-waisted thong bikinis.
It's almost like it was produced by a former porn producer.
It's all done tastefully. So, you know, just exposing all the right bits to get the men going, you know, if you know
that
what I mean.
Real biker wench chic.
That's what we want. So, Renegade the clothing line coming to stores 2021 when we want to go out again. And but then again, right now the Dutch at Home line is available right now if you want to be comfortable.
Perfect reintroduction to the post-COVID nightlife.
Precisely.
Tight jeans, white t-shirt tucked in, duster.
That's Bam. It.
Make an impression.
So, Renegade the clothing line. Get around it.
Oh boy,
Aaron, have you got one?
Not really. I just had an idea pop in as we were talking earlier about the first episode, where I love the idea of Renegade, where we mentioned him potentially smuggling his motorbike into a motel room. But I could see a spin-off where Renegade gets caught and he smuggles his motorbike bit by bit into prison.
Ooh.
And then he has a prison breakout just riding that over the wall. That's what I want to see.
Oh, boy.
So, like, as, you know, various pieces of contraband, you know, wrapped up in a book, or you get some socks with one single bolt.
Yeah.
And spark over the course plug. Of several years, rebuilds the motorbike.
Yeah. Piece by piece.
I got one. So, it's a bit of a... it's like, have you guys seen the Hairy Bikers that's doing the rounds on SBS Food at the moment? Kind of combined with many other on-location cooking shows that you'll see, like Huey's Cooking Adventures, for example. Oftentimes, he'll post up next to a river somewhere and cook us a feast. So this is it's a show where our celebrity chef who fronts it is just kind of traveling around the countryside on his motorbike looking for rivers, and it's Rito Rames's Riverside Restaurant. He'll talk us through some, you know, beans straight out of the can, some eggs,
just flipping spatulas, and all the other delicacies, left, right, and center.
Flipping them all over the place. All the other delicacies that he can think up that are perfect for that sort of living out of the bike lifestyle.
Jez, is this what you would describe as vertical dining, where one, in order to sort of initiate the eating experience, your chef would sort of be waiting there in stasis? And you kind of have to walk up hello, and then he offers you some kind of meal.
It's very NPC oriented.
What I really like about these reboots, both Jeremy and Morgan's, both of yours, is that Renegade really offers a whole lifestyle change.
Exactly. Yeah, we're capturing all of the Renegade lifestyle, not just the show itself, but the aesthetic and the diet.
It is all encompassing. You know?
It's so much more.
The only thing
we're
kind of missing is the workout routine.
Mm.
That's something we just didn't get a chance to even touch on. There's a lot more.
We've got the hobby, which is reconstructing his motorbike piece by piece in hotel rooms.
The clothing line. And,
it's the Renegade lifestyle. You know, you got to buy in.
This is a top five show we've ever watched. I just cannot. After watching this, I actually tempted to go back and watch more episodes of it because I just want to see more of the insanity.
Exactly what
shows.
We did with Baywatch Nights.
We went back and watched more Baywatch Nights. That didn't go so well, but it still was fun that one time we did it.
And there is so much more of this show. Five seasons.
110 episodes.
Make no mistake, this show is a pile of shit.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like... How did it get five seasons?
How did they get five seasons out of it?
Is it just Stu Segal bankrolling the whole thing?
Well, I think it must have been early cable. So I think it's sort of because it was on like syndicated, not like the channel syndicated, which is a cable channel, I think. So I think it, and clearly it's very, you know, cost wise, it doesn't look like it's costing a lot of money to make it.
No.
So. I think with a narrow audience, it was just able to keep rolling along. But maybe. From the reading I did, apparently Lamas and Stephen J. Cannell weren't happy with the scripts that were being put forward, which I found insane.
I can't imagine why.
Considering Stephen J. Cannell wrote created the show, I'm like, well, surely you can just change it. But anyway, that's really another hint all there. But I need to mention this. So I did some extra reading about Lorenzo Lamas. So Cheyenne, the woman that plays Cheyenne, was actually Lorenzo Lamas' wife at the start. So going into the show when he was cast, he pushed to get her hired on the show because their marriage apparently was sort of on a downward spiral. So he wanted to sort of bring them close together by being in the show.
That's what the therapist suggested.
Yeah, nothing like a spark to reignite the romance.
Introduce work.
So good thing they did, because they managed to get through season one before divorcing. only for Lamas later to try and...
Is she written out of the show?
She was in season five, but not before Lamas tried to get her sacked earlier so he could bring on his new girlfriend.
No!
Playboy playmate Shauna Sand, he tried to get... who did get written into the show into a 5-episode arc so he could supplant his ex-wife, who was still playing one of the main characters, to get her in.
Oh, man.
Well, Lamas has been married... Lamas has been married 5 times.
Last got a lot ending. Of love to give. You know?
I reckon we can have another reboot where it's just a behind-the-scenes doco of that whole shit show.
I would love to see that. So he tried to get her written out. Apparently, it was an absolute fucking rock fight inside that show with the undoing of that marriage. And they eventually got her written out season five. So
whether or not... Right in time for them to crash into the ground. Yeah, to end it.
Whether or not Stephen J. Cannell... sort of stepped in, but apparently, yeah, she was the woman that played Cheyenne something Kinmont. She was apparently savaged him on some radio program, Howard Stern, like Lamas and yeah, a very well known one, Lamas and Shauna Sand. Sorry, just took me a while to jog it, but anyway.
So I mean, when you're as successful as we are, everything else is just some radio program.
Exactly. Radio Howard Stern's not that popular down here. Give me a break,
Morgs. Where did you pull all this trivia from? Have you got like a book?
Do you hire a private eye for each episode to just like run background checks on all the actors?
I do, and I'm pretty sure they just go on IMDb and Wikipedia and pull all the information
The detail you get, I feel like it's a time traveling private eye who goes back to when the show was being made.
That'd be a great... I'd watch that Hasselhoff show.
I don't want to give up any secrets, but essentially I'm bacula-ing these people. I'm going back.
Quantum leap meets
becoming Reno Rames.
Yeah. I was Bobby Six Killer. I quantum leaped into Branscombe Richmond's body.
You quantum leaped into Bobby Six Killer's fluffers, because I assume all actors on the show had fluffers.
Oh, yeah. Just in case. How else are you supposed to press this? Steve wants to keep him as a peak performance.
Yeah. Force a habit, you know?
All right. This week's list is from IMDb user Creed Swede. It is called Actors Who Have Killed 100 or More. And it's just basically a list of people who have starred in movies who have kills on screen, and they've made basically a kill count.
Ooh.
So it's 411 people on this list.
Some work.
And our man Lorenzo is in there.
I wonder how many would
have
been
in this
show.
Do they have his kill count?
Is it ranked
his kill count
kill
is 148. It hasn't got a full breakdown, but he did get 49 kills in a movie called Bad Blood.
Damn.
49's a lot of kills.
That's a lot of kills.
Who does it rank it by most on-screen kills?
Yeah.
Frustratingly, no. It seems to be completely random. But the number one on the list is Lauren Avedon, who had 227 kills, but 159 of them came from a movie called No Retreat, No Surrender 2, Raging Thunder. So he's going at like 1.8 kills a minute.
The sequel really captured the original vision for that.
Exactly.
That franchise, I think.
Unfinished business.
Definitely. Really, really tasteful franchise.
They just didn't nail it with the first one, but the sequel really...
My thing with this whole list and everyone on here is I reckon it's easier to get kills nowadays because there's a lot of older actors who are racking up the kills in movies like Expendables 3. Harrison Ford got 37 kills in his Expendables 3.
What?
That's a lot, just a freebie. Man. I reckon it was harder to get kills back in the 90s when Lorenzo was slaving away. I reckon there needs to be some kind of adjustment to bump up his because, like, Harrison Ford.
Well, like, here's what I want to know. Like, the guy that plays the devil in Touched by an Angel, what's his kill count?
That's a good
question. Pretty high.
Everyone who's pretty ever high, died, maybe. Yeah. Certainly all those children in that school and the kittens.
A lot of blood on his hands there.
He does. There are some TIS favourites in here. Ron Perlman of Beauty and the Beast fame. He's got 171 kills.
That's a lot. Pretty
our solid. Man Tom Selleck, 140 kills.
Damn.
Yeah, but they're all justifiable kills.
Oh, yeah. Your man Morgan, John Travolta, 151.
Respectable from John.
What film do you reckon he kills the most in? Grease?
Yeah.
Battlefield Earth, probably.
That or Look Who's Talking Now. Both are absolute bloodbaths.
Oh, he kills. He savage.
Absolutely kills.
Every box office sale, that's a kill for the Travolta.
At least one person dies in the theater.
He drives a bus off a cliff in Hairspray and like 70 people die.
Yeah, it's brutal. Absolutely brutal. Those are the three most violent films of in history.
Yeah. It's not one for the kids.
I like this use of the list.
Yeah.
This is what they're for.
Yeah. This is another really good list. So I think that we've been
It's a list
in-
that's worthy of being a list in the first place, you know? It's something to actually list.
The one letdown is it's not done in order. I'd love to see who's on top because I think Stallone would be very high because
pretty high.
One of the Rambo movies is just bonkers. He's just firing from the hip and killing everyone. And
I think the mid-2000s reboot is the one where...
Yeah, that one. That's what I'm referring to.
Which goes to Aaron's theory.
Yeah, exactly. See, First Blood, back in like 1980, Stallone was playing it clean. He killed like one guy. Yep. Just neutralized the whole army.
And that guy fell out of the helicopter.
They drew First Blood.
Yeah, they drew First Blood. And then in the 2000s, they're just giving away like the cheapest chips. Exactly. Pennies on the dollar for kills these days.
Pennies on the dollar. Well, this has been a hell of a ride.
I'm spent.
I am absolutely spent. This is the birthday treat I was looking for. It has delivered. There's so much.
Are you guys just gonna relax into a post-coital can of beans? Because it feels
that's what I'm planning.
It's kind of that. It's that draining, you know.
Man, I'm actually exhausted by this.
Yeah.
I
have a feeling actually, like listeners will know before we will how long this episode will go for. But I have a feeling it's going to go for a bit longer than most of our episodes.
It's going to be a long one.
It's going to be a long one.
I'm going to say in advance, thank you for sticking with us.
Yeah.
And if you want to supplement your listening, please go ahead and find a way to watch this show. Because
this might even be a two-parter episode, Scott.
Oh, God. There's so much more to unravel.
I have one last little classy note here from the personal life of Lorenzo Lamas. He was a judge on a reality TV show called Are You Hot?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. He was also...
I wonder what that's about.
Yeah. His big move... What he was most well known for
really
there...
bearing the lead there.
Was he used a laser pointer to point out people's imperfections on the show.
Oh.
Which is something he famously pulled from another TV show, which is like why he thought it'd be a good angle. So as we said, a real class act, Lamas was.
Oh, boy.
You say he's been married 5 times?
Yes, 5 times. 5 times.
That number seems low after hearing some of this.
You can get him on Cameo, so, you know. You do what you want there.
Yeah. Listeners, we don't want to
rate your body with a laser pointer.
We don't want to put your money in the pocket of someone that you might not like very much, but...
Yeah, it's either Bezos or Lorenzo. Pinky Poison.
They're the only two options. we'll start to wrap things up, but final thoughts on Renegade. Are you guys planning on watching any more of this, or...?
Yeah.
I personally am.
Yeah, I think all around it's a bit of a yes.
I've got 29 days left of this Amazon Prime subscription and make full use of it.
How batshit the pilot and the finale is. Like, usually in any given run of a show, if it goes for 5 seasons, it gets pretty crazy. I can only imagine how crazy the most crazy episode of this show is. And I, for one, am interested in finding what that is and what kind of crazy it is.
I will be interested to see if there's a list out there because I don't think this has doesn't have a cult following like other ones does. It's going to be very hard to track down these little episodes because no one in their right mind will have gone through this to the fine tooth comb to find the right one.
No, but there is one.
Maybe we can be those people. No, I haven't got that sort of time. Okay, well, look, let's start to tie things up. So, look, as always, if you can go onto your preferred podcasting platform, rate and review, it always helps us get out there. Jump on our website, theincompleteseries.com.au. Scott, is that right? .com.au?
No.
Okay, Renegade on TV.
Renegade
on TV.com.
Go on there and drop us a suggestion. We might find another Renegade. That would be glorious.
Can we just give another shout out? Was it Paul?
Was Paul who suggested the show? Paul. He really had our number.
Paul, thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul.
This has been coming,
Paul. We're going to rely on you.
And Paul, if you haven't seen Renegade, go back and watch it because you'll fucking love it.
I'm sure he's seen it.
All right, so look, let's just leave things there. So thank you, Jez.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Aaron.
Happy birthday.
And thank you, Scott.
Happy Renegade Day.
Thanks for listening.